That's right. Welcome back to another episode of Political Football. That's right. You heard it there correctly. That was Jimmy Barnes shouting out, banging out, as he likes to do, Working Class Man, one of the iconic songs that goes to the heart of an Australian mythology around things, around the farm, around building things, working class men. You know, I like to talk about the Western Suburbs roots, you know, and the working men's club that was Wes. But sort of goes to sort of that post-World War II thing, you know, a big agricultural sector, big manufacturing sector. But over time, that sort of question, you know, sort of gone down as it would become more of a service based economy. Like yourself, Joseph, and myself, both work in different service delivery arms.
Live to serve, brother.
That's right. But sort of what we'll be talking about on the political side of this podcast, and I'll get to how you're going in a minute, mate, but we'll be talking about sort of the titans of industry. So that's the premise of the podcast, riding off the sheep's back to digging out something out of the ground, a little thing called coal, and how we export that overseas and how we can make our industry policy better going forward so we can continually sort of have and fund the things that we want to do domestically, and just go to that sort of the heart of that narrative in relation to, you know, we do a lot of things productively in terms of resources. It doesn't provide the jobs we necessarily want it to. So how do we match the two? There's been a lot of thought being put over this over, you know, for years, but we're going to touch on that, seeing that's the increasing focus of the budget. On the sporting side, Joseph, first off, how are you, mate? How does 2 points for Parramatta in the bye feel?
Yeah, it feels good, mate, other than the fact of the Dylan Brown fiasco that's just happened. But we'll work that out. He's got court tomorrow. We'll get into that later. Yeah, I've been all right, mate. Just, you know, just trying to cope with what happened last Wednesday. But I've been on a bit of a positivity pilgrimage, as it were. Just trying to remain calm, remain positive, and keep that belief that the Blues can get the job done, which I still think they can. But, you know, we'll get into that at the back end of the episode, won't we, Tom?
That's right. It manifests that positive energy. And we'll also touch on a bit of cricket for our long-suffering fans of political football. World Test Championship is imminent. And when I say imminent, we're 24 hours away from that. When I think of the elite moments in cricket, I think of the World Test Championship. Maybe it'll be like that one day, but I doubt it. IPL and that sort of gear. But yeah, we'll talk about that. Australia's named their team for take on India. It's a one-off match, sort of like a World Cup final, but for Test matches. If that works, we'll see. And then moving into the Ashes, which I think is obviously, it's been a little bit of a talk that we're using the World Test Championship as a warm-up. There's a bit of disrespect to that, but yeah, I think we'll take care of the Indians in a neutral venue.
Don't give away too much. We got to keep these.
Sorry, I just got me going. I was talking to someone at work about it earlier, and you was getting me up and about.
We
got to
keep them hanging on to
that's
the
right,
end.
That's right. Anyway, let's jump into the policy side of things, right? And I suppose I address this topic from coming from the perspective of just reading Judith Brett's quarterly essay from 2020, thanks to a recent gift from the recently departed Marko Bogićević. And when I say recently departed, no, he's not dead, he's just moved overseas. So the premise of her quarterly essay is called The Coal Curse, Resources, Climate and Australia's Future. So it sort of talks about how Australia's industry policy has shaped over time, and how it became a successful nation, contrary to sort of other nations which rely on resources for their material wealth, and whether we're a strong social democracy with strong institutions, but how we could get better over time, actually making things here. Now, I'm not sure what you mean for yourself, Joseph, but, you know, that goes to the mythology, I suppose, of the Australian character, sort of riding off the sheep's back into, you know, digging things out of the ground to, you know, become the country that we are. But I like to think of ourselves as a country that makes things, even though I'm not too good with my hands myself. I wouldn't mind to be. But, you know, grew up without a father and that sort of thing. But no, I'm just kidding. That's why I can joke about those things. It's about me.
Do I laugh? Yeah,
yeah. You can laugh, mate. I'm perfectly fine. I'll turn out all right. Probably a bit too fine for some people. Anyway, we'll talk about that. So give me some framing here and stop the horsing around. Over time, Australia's fallen down in the Harvard University's Atlas of Economic Complexity. You ask what the Harvard Atlas of Economic Complexity is, Joseph. I heard you just say that.
What is that, Tom?
It's a ranking. It ranks global economies by their economic diversity and complexity to measure potential growth opportunities. So effectively, it looks at everything you do in the economy and says, well, how concentrated is one activity relative to the other?
Gotcha.
So say education makes up 6% of of an economy, that's 6%. Say other countries might have, you know, mining, that might be 40% of their economy, right? So he looks at that, right? The smaller the industries, the more granular you get and the more sort of interdependencies you have, the greater the economic complexity. And over time, Australia's actually slipped down this ranking. I think we're, you know, down in the 90s out of 133 countries. And when we think of ourselves as a global economy, I think we're the 13th biggest economy globally. A lot of that relies on income that comes from agricultural exports, mining exports, and one or two other services like education, a bit further down the list, professional services. But a lot of it in that top 10 is commodities just exported at their face value without any sort of value-adding activity. I suppose when you think about the other end of the spectrum, you think of Germany, you think of Japan. You know, Japan's got a very advanced car manufacturing sector. So does Germany. They have a manufacturing policy, right? And this is not something that's happened by accident. They've specifically designed policy. They have 1/3 of workers on boards in Germany. They value technical college just as much as they value university over there. I think probably here that's been a value thing that sort of shifted. Not to say there's anything wrong with the university education, but if you're getting a 65 ATAR and you're going to Western Sydney University to study law, and I'm not saying, I'm talking about Western Sydney University, great university, but probably not the best university to study law at, right? Maybe it is best to go to a technical college and learn a trade or become a diesel mechanic. Anyway, that's my value statement done for there. Joseph, let's talk about yourself, because I know you've got three brothers all working trades. Just tell me a bit about them and what they do, you know, just to get that bit of personal story. That's what the viewers really love here at Political Football.
I've got two brothers who are carpenters and one brother who's an electrician. They're mostly residential, so just like smaller jobs. Obviously, commercial jobs are bigger, sort of you're working for a larger construction company, but yeah, they're sort of contract, they do a lot of contract work, so they're pretty independent, and they just float around and help out different companies with bigger jobs who need a bit more help. You know, they will do anything from help build or completely renovate a house or build a deck in, like, the other week they were in Camperdown, this week they're in Neutral Bay, the next week they're in such and such, and it's cool. So yeah, they get to go around and do different stuff. Tom, my oldest brother, he's actually been out of work for a year or so now. He fell off a roof, electrician, and just screwed, like basically butchered his knee. But yeah, he's, I don't know what he's doing now, but I think he's still on the insurance money.
Talk about that. The lawyers are taking care of that, all right? Yeah. All right.
But
he wasn't practicing WWE on the roof. That was the main thing.
Is there any specific other thing you want to?
No, that was just I'm saying they are critical. You know, like we talk about, especially, you know, housing and energy policy, probably the two key things that have sort of been abandoned over the last decade or even more in Australia, and we need more houses, especially in places where people want to live. So just saying, people like your brothers there, they're going to be critical to Australia's roadmap to the future, right? And not to get too political there, but I just think it's a sort of a value piece I wanted to get to, is that, you know, Judith Brett mentions in her quarterly essay that for a, so 6.3% of Australia's workforce is employed in the manufacturing sector. That's declined over time. I think it might have been even as in the 70s, that would have been well into the 20s or 30s. And that's declined over time as economies become open and we sort of can't compete on labour costs compared to other countries around the world. But suppose these numbers are down, and so we've only got 80,000 skilled metal workers. So it's 42,500 structural steel workers and 36,000 metal fitters and machinists. And if we want to do all the things we want to do in relation to the National Reconstruction Fund, which we'll get to in a second, you know, renewable energy zones and building, you know, cleaner and cheaper energy at the scale that we need to do it, not only just for ourselves, but if we want to export and become a renewable energy superpower like many economists forecast, then we're going to require a lot more than what we've currently got, right? And this is sort of where the rubber hits the road is what I want to get to. Is like, you can talk about all these fanciful ideas, and it's wonderful to talk about value add, you know, and think of, you know, writing off, you know, sort of Banjo Patterson, you know, Snowy, you know, the man from Snowy River, you know, and being a man of the land. But you've actually got to put policies in place. And if you want to do the stuff that we want to do in relation to industrial policy and be a country that makes things again, we've actually got to set things in train when it comes to education and training, the right macroeconomic settings, you know, from a macro level at a federal level of treasury there, which I know Keating tried to focus a lot on when he was in. You know, you've got to set these things in train, and that's sort of what I wanted to get to. And to sum it up really nicely, Judith Brett, one of her quotes from the piece, I believe it was page 42 of the piece. the problem is not so much that we sell to the world, but what we don't sell. A diverse range of capital-intensive value-added industrial products that require high levels of specific knowledge and skills. So in other words, you know, if you, you know, another classic example is we want to build the defense, you want to build the submarines here, right? But suppose since we've hollowed out the car industry, since that was sort of gone, like there's no Holden factory here anymore, you know, then Ford packed up and so did Toyota, that means, you know, you're weighed down or sort of the skill level you need, because, you know, that has transferable skills and we probably didn't handle that transition too well. Not saying we have to manufacture cars here for eternity, but, you know, the next batches of Commodore, you know, the cruisers here, I think Holden needed about a $250 million subsidy to get that going off the ground. Now, in America, they did that, right? They rode the wave of the GFC. The US government stepped in, right, subsidised it, and now they're back up again, you know, because the conditions have become more favourable and that sort of thing. So I'm just saying, everything's a trade-off, right? You want to develop an industry, you know, there needs to be policy frameworks around it. So let's go to the budget and get a bit more contextual here. I suppose if you read the tea leaves from Albo, you know, and I suppose it goes to the heart of the Labor Party is referring to their policy of, you know, being proud to make things here. They've long advocated for getting the submarines manufactured here. Of course, Emmanuel Macron and Malcolm Turnbull had a love affair, so they made a deal, and we ended up paying $3 billion for submarines that we never got. You show me a hardworking Frenchman, I'll show you a liar. That's besides, I don't have any gripes with the French, okay? I'll be there shortly, all right? Good luck to you. But the National Reconstruction Fund, right? I think its overall off-budget value is about $15 billion, and the purpose of it is to provide finance to projects in priority areas that Australia has natural and competitive strengths in. So that again goes to sort of the heart of an economic principle of comparative advantage. You produce, you make things that you do better than the rest of the world and the rest of the world wants, and then you buy things that from the rest of the world that you can't make here or they make better overseas. And that leads to, you know, optimal trade, especially for a small trading nation like Australia. In terms of the areas of the economy with the National Reconstruction Fund will be focused on, it'll be renewables and low emissions technology. So that, you know, obviously goes to building more solar farms, building wind farms, offshore wind, creating the right conditions for that in terms of investment. Medical science, so we're talking about biotech there, med tech, you know, so the ability to develop new vaccines, develop our pharmaceutical space there, as well as medical devices. Australia has some of the best medical research capability in the world, but we're not very good at commercializing it. In other words, we develop a lot of the IP here at universities, but then when it comes to actually turning it into a product like the Americans do or some European countries do, they do it better than us. That goes to tax concessions. It goes to how we set things up here. So there's different framing around that, and that's long been identified as an issue. Transport, you know, enabling roads, you know, freight, you know, the inland rail is being built from Melbourne to Brisbane, so that'll improve the corridors for regional towns. So there's some work around that. Value-adding agricultural, forestry and fishing. Oh, this is something I'm really passionate about. As a city boy, you wouldn't think, oh, who's this guy who watches Landline every week and tunes in and watches, you know, Pip Courtney and elite R.M. Williams Vest talk about Australia's agricultural sector. Well, let me tell you, it's one of the most innovative sectors going around, right? Great return on intellectual property, right? And you watch it Landline every week and it makes you proud to be an Aussie. It makes you proud to be an Aussie, right? And tune in here because I want to roll here. I don't want to roll, right? Value-adding resources, so again, that goes to mining critical minerals, actually doing more of the processing here. So rather than digging the rock out of the ground in raw format and just shipping it overseas for it to be manufactured and put into a solar panel or to be used to make steel, actually doing that process here. There's talk in relation to there's some money in the budget for hydrogen, green hydrogen, which actually making steel through that process, which is like a low emissions technology as well. So two birds, one stone there. Defense capability. So obviously a shit ton of money going into submarines. I reckon I'll be dead before I see a submarine built here, but that's just my personal cynicism, but good luck to you. And then enabling capabilities. So it talks about sort of, I imagine that's a digital infrastructure, making sure, you know, wires are connected, power, like transmission, electricity transmission. So if you're going to build all these renewable energy zones in regional areas, you've got to be able to transport into the city so it can be connected. So that's what we're talking about there. So it's an all-encompassing policy, right? It is a flagship policy, right? And at headline value, it's good stuff, but you've got to get in the weeds. You've got to get in the weeds, you've got to twist it there. Joe, before I talk myself out of breath, mate, do you have any questions or any thoughts on that?
There's a lot running through my head right now, mate. I heard a lot of things just now. Look, one thing, I don't know much about what we make here, Tom, but I can tell you what we do make, and we make kookaburras. I feel like if we focus on expanding the game of cricket, that'll up the sales and up the demand of kookaburra bats, kookaburra balls.
Yep.
Okay, that's one thing I do know about the economy. Speaking of economy, I'm actually I've actually been substituting for an economics class
lately. Oh, really?
I've wanted to get you on the landline. Speaking of landline, a couple of times to help me out. Feel like a lost dog in that. But mate, look, you've definitely done your reading on the topic.
Yeah.
That's one thing we do know. What's the prospects of having sort of like boosts in the manufacturing market soon? I know you said the thing about what are they called, submarines, but
yeah.
Anything else on the radar?
Well, I think it's not an overnight fix, right? Like, it has to go to, you know, the money is there, right? We've got the money, but it's actually putting the cogs in the wheel to sort of actually get it across the line, right? So it's actually getting the workers, right?
Why
so
don't we make stuff? Is it because labor's too expensive?
That's a key part of it.
Mm.
Right, we've gone to a services-based economy, right? It actually sort of, in terms of the share of what manufacturing and sort of mining make up of an economy, right? Especially sort of mining and ag, right? They're not huge employing sectors. So they have huge export value. Because what we do, you know, it's valuable to the rest of the world. But in terms of, you actually do things more productively, it means you meet less people over time, right? So it's the value is huge there. But in terms of a relative size, as to people like working in healthcare and social assistance or education and training, professional services, finance, these are our big employing sectors in the cities. But it's about doing that. And I think that there's definitely been a focus over the, you know, and there's been, you know, there's some areas where there's private sector investment. You look at all, sort of Albury Wodonga's got a big defence presence down there, so that lends itself to, you know, sort of defence manufacturing. Same with the sort of Queanbeyan and Palaring region down in your way.
That's my hometown, mate.
And then, you know, sort of there's associated value-add activities as well. So when we talk about value-add activities, well, it's like we got mining, we got ag. Well, what can we actually do here? So, for example, down in Chimut Way, Snowy Valleys region, right? Big timber industry down there.
Mm.
Well, they've actually got a mill down there. They've got other sort of wood product manufacturing, and that, you know, they even make brooms.
Brooms.
Yeah, they make brooms. Yeah, everyone needs a broom.
Yeah.
Right. Laker's got a broom. Yeah. They got swept by the Nuggets.
Well, they might have to teach the Aussie batting lineup how to sweep.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Ian Healy, get the bat out, mate. So it's about value add activities, right? And, you know, I think for me, I know a lot of economists will say, you know, Australia couldn't, you know, plump up its car industry anymore. But for me, it was a mistake, given just how much money has been put into manufacturing since. And it's been identified as sort of, and sort of COVID's brought that on, that whole sort of supply chain thing. And that's been part of the inflation issue, is just how reliant we are on global supply chains, and we're this little place at the bottom of the world that takes the longest things for it to get to. You know, I think, you know, the expertise there. But again, it's about those things overnight. And the capability is there. And a lot of, you know, relies, as I said, on the macroeconomic conditions. You know, if the Aussie dollar drops, it's good for exports because it means our exports are cheaper relative to the rest of the world. If our dollar increases, it means that things become more expensive to the rest of the world relative to what they can buy elsewhere. So around that 2013-14 period, we recovered well from the GFC, and our Australian dollar was near on par with the US dollar. So that affected our exports. So that was a particularly tough time. But
wouldn't mind that happening again.
Just in the next
6 months, just so I can transfer my money at an even rate. But anyway,
yeah.
I won't make it about me.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Personal interest. It's a wonderful thing, isn't it? So yeah, and to put it into context, sort of the car industry employed more people than coal mining before it shut down.
Bring back Holden.
Well, if you look at the driveway outside, I still drive a Holden.
Yeah, me too.
Absolutely, we're supporting Australian manufacturing. That's exactly what it's about. Right. I've been described as a patriot at work before. I wouldn't call it a patriot. I was just talking about a well-rounded economy that generates high good jobs for good people. So yeah, as I was saying before, the biggest problem with Australia's efficient production of primary commodities is that it has not been able to produce enough jobs. And this goes to what Judith Brett talks about. Numerically, 4.4%, so it's ag and mining of our workforce, are in industries that produce 70% of our export income. So again, you don't necessarily have to have a huge amount of people working in it. I think manufacturing requires a bit more, but even that, I think the manufacturing going forward is going to be advanced manufacturing. It's going to be high capital intensive, not labor intensive. That's going to be other parts of the world. But if we do things right, we could do green steel here. Mm. We could do aluminium smelting, but in a more low emissions way. So there's Ross Gartner who goes to speak to that in his book Superpower and his later book called Reset. So I'll give, for those listeners out there, I'll give those a read. And I suppose with cheap energy generated from the renewable energy zones and sort of. We produce enough food to feed Australia three times over. You know, we export a lot to the Asian market and American markets in that space as well. Australia could, you know, ensure that manufacturing stays strong without, you know, falling off the face of a cliff. So suppose that's the heart of what we're getting to here. Some other budgetary measures include $392 million to support Australian startups commercialise their ideas and grow their opportunities. So that sort of goes to what I was talking about before in medical research. Mm. The medical research itself is good, but in terms of commercialising new ideas and getting things to a product stage to capture the IP, that could be improved. Critical technology. So again, that goes to critical minerals there, but also development of quantum computing, artificial intelligence. I know University of New South Wales is leading in that space. Right. You know, so there's opportunity there. And these incubators are coming up, right? So I think they're starting to be addressed. And the best solutions are local, mate, as I've always said.
That's it, mate.
They're always local.
That's it.
The people doing the stuff have the greatest know-how. You just got to empower them.
That's right.
And so there's heaps of things in the budget there. So they're just waiting for people to capture them. So if you're an aspiring inventor or a manufacturer listening to this show, and trust me, we've got plenty. We've got plenty who tune in this show.
We need hundreds. To build ourselves one of those. Have you seen the thing in Saudi Arabia, the line?
No, I haven't. No,
have you seen that?
No.
So it's like a. It's like a vertical city that they're building.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. Neon.
20Ks.
Neon.
We need our own line. All right. Get us a line. Yeah. Run it straight through Western Australia.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, if things are going the way they're going, I might need some consulting work in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, right. There's a lot happening in Saudi Arabia. I might end up
I've heard there's some ridiculous consulting contracts going there. So
might end up doing weird shit to get myself to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. Just don't go to Chop Chop Square. Anyway, that's where we're going to leave that discussion there. I hope you've been inspired by that tool. It sparked some things in your mind. I've always been fascinated by industry policy in terms of what we do and what makes things tick. Again, if you want to tune into and you want to be inspired, just tune into Landline every week. Pip Courtney will serve you up a delicious platter of Australian innovation. But yeah, we'll leave it there and we'll come back with some sport very, very shortly.
It really shitted me off that these so-called experts who have never managed, who have never been leaders in regards to making tough decisions. And that was a big risk tonight. And I knew I was going to cop it. Cop it from every one of you in here tonight if we had got beaten. But I was prepared to take the risk. That's leadership. Not these other Muppets who pretend they know.
There you go. That was Ricky Stewart blowing up at the media circus. I think he's been spending too much time hanging around Alan Jones. in the circle there, but he had no reason to be upset seeing that the officials handed them the game on Friday night. West Tigers robbed of two competition points yet again. Had flashbacks to North Queensland last year. Had flashbacks to Manly 6 weeks ago when Jason Saab knocked the ball on in the match deciding try. Right, I'm sick of these weak gutted dogs. Right, and I'm sick of these apologies. after the game saying that Luke Brooks was taken out and the bunker should have seen it at the time and they reviewed it and it was incorrect. Well, it was Joe Offie and Gary not scoring a try 2 weeks ago. Luckily, we put 66 on the board. But this week, two competition points is two competition points and robbed again. Now, if we miss the competition by the finals by 2 points at the end of the season, I'll be suing the NRL for wrongful damages. Because it's just a joke and it keeps on happening.
I'll be suing a lot of people if you guys are making the finals. If you guys are 2 points off the finals.
Well, I'll have every intention of playing finals football, Joseph. And for those who haven't been watching the Tigers, we have been one of the top teams in the last 6 weeks of competition football. We've got the fourth best in defence in the competition since the first week of the bye. Right, if we hadn't considered tries off kicks, we'd probably have the number one defence. Right, we didn't concede one line break against Canberra last week. Our front up contact is elite. Right, so many weeks that we've conceded less than 20 missed tackles. Right, Johnny Bateman's playing his ass off. Right, Luke Brooks has turned a leaf in his book, and we're just playing phenomenally, right? So my prediction is, you know, if no more screw over by the refs, Western back in the finals, and you can take my word for it, mate.
Well, all that, and you're 3-9. Okay, so what is going wrong? What's left to do? Because you can't take we're getting robbed. You were down 18-0 up to that. Like, it was a miraculous comeback at the end.
It wasn't a miraculous comeback if you watched the game.
Well, they had 12 men on the field. You scored two tries with 12 men on
three,
the field.
Three tries with 12 men on the field.
Three.
And if you actually watched the game, that should have happened a lot earlier because Canberra was so cynical at the ruck. Now, Ricky can talk at the press conference that he had 8-6 against and West had none. The play the ball speed was just absolutely horrible from Canberra. They were just laying on. It was cynical. He obviously said pretty much, I don't care what you do, do not let quick play the balls, right? Because this play, for all of us who know footy, right, the speed of the ruck determines the outcome of the game. 95% of the time, the team that has the faster play the balls will win the game. Winning the ruck is the source of all success in football, especially in rugby league. And so in that case, that's got three tries off kicks. Right, two were off lucky things off upright, one of which Luke Brooks has pushed out of the way, which the NRL came out and said that was a wrong decision, as I mentioned earlier. Right, the other one was a fluke, and the third one was Jackie White and getting a rebound, and then Jordan Rapana running around Hudson Young to score the try. So anyone who says 18-0 was a fair line scoreline after 65 minutes would have to have eyes painted on. West were the better team. They're a young team, right? The one issue with West is They have to score early, otherwise their confidence gets a bit shot and their attack still looks a bit rusty. But once they score, they can put on the points. And I should be sitting here with two more points, four from six in their last ones. We're rolling into a Thursday night against Gold Coast, which we usually have a poor record against. But given where the way we're playing, that's up at Seabus Super Stadium.
It's a red hot shot,
right? Yeah, I hope so, because to give you a bit of flashback, and I'll be at the AFL this Thursday night for my favourite round of the year, Pride Round. But anyway, moving on from that. Look, I have a different sense of humour after 6 p.m. Okay, just unleash the different beasts. I'll be watching it on KO. And so to get back to the story,
you'll be watching the Tigers. I'll be watching at
the Swans. I'll be like, good on you, buddy, Jareem Buller, you superstar. Also, World Test Championship. But what a night of sport. Anyway, that's besides the point. Last year, I actually made the pilgrimage down to Melbourne. I was there at Warney's Memorial, and I actually took myself to Western Bulldogs versus Sydney Swans at Etihad Stadium, or Marvel Stadium is now affectionately called. And I saw Buddy's 1,001st goal.
Oh, perfect.
I was also there the week before.
You were the only one storming the field.
Yeah, that's right.
You're thrown out.
Yeah, that's Melbourne AFL fans. They are a different beast.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, just I've got a poor record against Gold Coast, but that's my bugbear there. Joseph, what was your takeaway from round 14?
Round 14, look, wasn't the most enticing round of footy you've ever seen. I did enjoy that Tigers-Raiders game. I do think, you know, it was the Tigers were a little bit unlucky. Look, I don't hold the same sentiment they were robbed, but, you know, you are an avid West Tigers fan, so that's fair enough. I think it's more poorly on the Raiders for just letting three tries back-to-back-to-back. You know, with 12 men, you know, you're bound to let in a one or two, but just to crumble like that, I think that's the issues the Raiders have been having the past two or three years, is not being able to hold on to leads. But they ended up coming back and winning that on the penalty call.
We won't talk about that.
We got into a bit of a blue before recording about that, so we'll just leave it there.
I think Joe's still a bit upset that Isaiah Papali'i's in the black, white and gold. Let's just put it that way.
I definitely am, but that's all right. We make stars and ship them off. That's fine. The rest of the round, yeah, honestly, that the only other notable game I can think of that I enjoyed watching was the, I guess, Sharks-Broncos. It was an ugly game, though. I guess it was just a close scoreline. Went down to the end, but yeah, not my most enjoyed round of the season, but that's what you get around Origin time. A lot of sort of call-ups coming in from the lower grades to fill those voids, but should be a good round coming up this weekend, Tom, I think.
Very good, very good. I would say the other point I would make was that James Tedesco was back to his roaring best form, and for anyone who sought to criticise him... Anyone who sought to criticise him after Origin 1 clearly has a short-term memory loss because he has been a spectacular player for New South Wales, and he certainly wasn't the source of the issue. There were certainly players way ahead of him in terms of who caused the issue.
See, I don't want to let him off the hook that easy.
It's not about letting him off the hook.
They had one good game against the Bulldogs, and they still won by only 1 point.
The only reason they won, they scored any tries, is because of James Tedesco, right? The Roosters aren't the Roosters of old, right? Yeah,
exactly.
These are the Roosters. The Roosters are the equivalent of the Tigers 2015-16.
So why has he got a mortgage on the New South Wales one?
Jim? Because he's still a spectacular talent.
But I haven't seen it. When am I seeing that?
What do you saw it on the weekend?
Once.
What do you mean? And he's had a bit of a dead time, but so was Trbojevic, some of the other players.
Yeah,
right?
I don't think he should have been picked either.
That's just ridiculous. So, like, when someone has put together one of the greatest sample sizes in Origin history, I would say arguably better than Joey, over time. Ah! Yeah, absolutely. I've never seen a guy overhyped like Joey, and he's in the camp, and he doesn't know, he's got no idea how to teach a team how to play. Man, overrated.
I'm just saying, when someone's out of form, based on their sample size. So they've given their sample size, but then their current form is leaps and bounds past, lower than that. Then why should they just be a shoo-in for Origin? You go with the guy who's literally in red hot form.
No, you go with the guy who's been there and delivered it, and who's built up enough. You don't own a jersey, but you certainly get.
Then how do you make other guys ready to do it when he retires?
Well, they've got to knock the door down. He knocked the door down. He knocked the door down for 2 years before he played Origin, mm. right? And so did Cleary, and so did a lot of these guys. The other, the issue I would say was the forward pack. The forward pack rotation was abominable.
Oh, I can agree with you.
It was absolutely. Junior Barlow only got 30 minutes. Tevita Pengai, he may as well have been a passenger out there, right? Hudson Young, 20 minutes and hooked. Right, Liam Martin probably should have started. They definitely needed another big bumper on the bench, whether that's Stefano, Daniel Saifidi, David Clemmer, who seems to escape Origin conversation, but has been immense, and I mean immense. Has missed one tackle all year and has been averaging over 165 metres a game.
Honestly, you don't pick a back rower for Origin anticipating to hook them. You'd leave it Hudson Young was woeful at the start of the game, but you take him off after, 30 or so minutes... Yeah. And then you've got Hines on the bench who you wouldn't have used unless Turbo got injured. Yeah. So that's two positions on your interchange that you're not going to move. Yeah. So you're basically running two subs for the rest of the game. Yeah. That just drives me insane.
And it's a continual issue with New South Wales is that Fittler continually gets outcoached by Slater. Slater is a brilliant tactical mind, right? He unleashes a different beast in some of these plays. Lindsay Collins certainly had been set the water on fire for the Roosters this year, but goes out there and does a job. Ruben Cotter has been in a struggling Cowboys team. Good individual efforts himself, but comes out and puts in a man-of-the-match performance. And I suppose it goes to one of the questions we got from Liam here from Brisbane, a co-worker of mine, who's, get ready for it because he does lay on the motor here. And it's a question that's been asked a lot over the last two Origin games, and the fallout from them is, does the Origin jersey mean more to Queensland? What are your thoughts on that, mate?
I feel like the rhetoric behind that debate is I feel like it's not having the desired effect for New South Wales people, New South Welshmen, yep. and women. You want that debate to enrage New South Welshmen in a way that will put more pride in the jersey. But I feel like it's just helping Queensland so much. Like, it's getting under our skin, but it's not, it doesn't seem to be frustrating the camp, or like, you know what I mean? Yeah. I'm not seeing any aggression coming out of the New South Wales camp on the field to sort of like shut that shit down. Yeah. Whereas like, I don't know if that makes any sense or not, but it's just how I say it. I feel like it gives Queensland more fuel than it's giving us.
Yeah.
And I feel like that just comes into like, I feel like you have to engage in those sort of battles.
Yeah.
Like Joey, for example, engages in those battles, and people love seeing him get wound up, and people like love the passion coming out, but then no one else is sort of backing him up on that sort of arena. Yeah, I want to see people rip people's heads off over that.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, right? And I suppose Queensland being the smaller state, being the northern state, being a more regional state, it has the dynamics to allow that to fester more than it does here. New South Wales, biggest state in the country. You know, Sydney, the most global city. You know, there's a bit more new, you know, a bit more outward looking here, whereas Queensland love that inward looking thing. I would say Queensland and WA are the two states a lot that obviously WA doesn't have origin. Maybe it should. But look, I think it depends on the players. I think you need a bit of, speaking of regional New South Wales, I think you need a bit of country in there.
That's what I was going to say. I feel
Liam
like
Martin,
the jersey means more to the, like, the jersey means less as you come into Sydney.
Yeah.
But like, if you go outside of Sydney into the regional areas, yeah, like, that is just, that's complete bullshit. Yeah. Like, that, the jersey means everything to the rest of the state. Like, obviously in Sydney, it's like such a massive hub of rugby league where you've got players coming from across the world to play. So that sort of like intensity and pride in the New South Wales jersey is just watered down a bit. So you have to look a bit harder to find it. But like, as you spread out into the rural New South Wales, that's where you find it. And I don't think there's a lot of that in the team right now. Like, you have your Martins and your Burtons and your Yos, but like
Hudson Young.
Yeah. And I suppose that's all you're getting it from, right? Like, a lot of the other fellas in the New South Wales team, either Sydney City boys or some Islander boys who have come, I guess, or grown up in Islander families, that may have a lot of pride for the state, or that may have only come onto their radar as they come up through rep footy. But like, it's beside the point. I think it's complete bullshit. I think the pride comes when you're handed the jersey, not like it can manifest in a lot of different ways for a lot of different people. But if you get given the jersey, you should know the job that you've got to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like it's not our issue right now for New South Wales isn't a pride issue.
Yeah.
I feel like it's just a lack of confidence in the leadership issue and the failure to sort of make the right decisions.
I mean, when you think of Reuben Cotter, Tommy Flegler, who else am I missing there? Lindsay Collins. It's like they're a couple of stormtroopers for Pauline Hanson. You know, it's like it's that sort of Queensland, it's like one Queensland sort of vibe, like One Nation Queensland.
Yeah.
Wonder what the equivalent of is here, you know, whether we need to roll someone out, you know, who's a junior to coming through, who's a big fan of the Shooter, Fishers and Farmers Party, or something along those lines. But I see Liam Martin has it, right, being a Tamora boy, where there was one couple of times he just flew out of the line, just like chopping arm, like, yeah, and you just go, oh, like that, right? And he's like that. Hudson Young has a bit of grub about him in that regard too. And I was speaking to someone who says, you definitely need a regional balance in the team. Isaiah Yeo, you don't think of someone who's aggressive, but he's, you know, he's reliable, got middle of the sort of field, sort of guy, Dubbo man. Maybe Matt Burton's the answer at six, you know, like, you know, remember, I mean, you know, he got into the fisticuffs last year with Gowdy.
Yeah,
like, get him up, even though Tino was holding, get him up.
Yeah, 100% agree. Yeah, but Queensland are just good. They're good narrative sort of builders, and they control the origin narrative, I will say, lately. Like, think about the whole 8-year period. That was a narrative in itself, like, just like legendary team, you know, can they be beaten, blah, blah, blah. That ends. Then it switches over. New South Wales seem like, we have a bit of momentum. We have this awesome side. So then Queensland start this worst team ever sort of narrative, and then they beat us on the back of that. Now they're starting, like, you know what I mean? Now they're starting the pride in the jersey narrative. They're beating us over that as well.
Yeah.
They're just starting, like, they play the long game. I swear they build this shit up over the whole year.
What do they say?
They're playing Origin from the end of game three 1 year to the end of game three the next year. They're playing the whole game the whole year.
You know, they say control the narrative and everything else takes care of itself.
That's exactly right. You're doing a very good job of that.
So walk me through your halves pairing for game two for New South Wales. A must-win game up at Suncorp, otherwise known as Death Valley for New South Wales.
I have got Burton at six, and I've had him at six from before game one. And I've got Hines at seven. I just think we should sort of feed into that structure of having a seven who's just going to lead the team in terms of structure and everything in regards to that. And then you need a ball running six who can also give you a good kicking option. And that's literally exactly what Burton is. He can also defend his ass off. He's got a lot of energy. I just think him on the outside with some of those other players who he's linked up with before. Yeah, he's just a prolific ball runner, and he has that ability to come in and make a big kick or something that I just think Luai's game isn't really suited towards. And especially without Nathan, I just think Luai might be a little bit lost. I think giving him that total leader sort of position in the halves or upgrading his leadership in the halves isn't something you want to be experimenting with in Origin. I feel like that's more of a club thing,
yeah.
Which we might see out of him in the next few weeks. But yeah, I've got Burton and Hines as my halves.
I think that's it's a pretty good combination. I think I'm not sure they'll go with that.
No.
Like I said, the rationale there, I also like the combination of Burton linking up with Addo Carr.
Mm.
That's liable to produce a try for kick or, you know, a long field, you know, coming out of yardage. I think in the most likely combination is Walker and Hines.
Yeah.
I think that'd be
my next, or even on par. Walker's been incredible this season.
Yeah, I think even though Walker was average in the 2020 series, I think that was a series to forget for a lot of people. And the way he's been playing, I think maybe deserves another chance.
Just linking up with Latrell on that edge. Oh my gosh.
Of course, it's question marks over Latrell's fitness as well, going into game two. But we'll see how we go there. I think if he's healthy to go on the day,
I think he's named for South this week. So let's
get our stats going on that quickly.
No, he's actually not.
All right, okay, it's not named. the other one, which would be an interesting combination, and I think would turn the Lebanese community of Sydney into a frenzy, would be Burton and Moses.
I don't want it. It'd be cool. It'd be great to see Moses come in and perform for New South Wales, but I'm a bit selfish at the moment. I just want Moses to play his best club footy and focus on getting the Eels back on track, especially now that our other half had to go and bloody get fiddly in the, yeah, in the clur. Yeah. Fiddly in the clur.
Do not touch me there.
But yeah, I don't want to see Moses play Origin right now.
Right. Okay. Well, and there's been a few the Tigers fans on Twitter, mate. If you think I'm up there, mate, you should. They're next level, right? They've been suggesting getting the old band back together. Tedesco at one, Brooks at six, and Moses at seven.
Imagine that.
I know I've sent around some social media content at the start of the week to a few mates about that. Just dreaming of that, and what could have been, the big three, the superstars, you know, one representing Italian Australia, one representing Lebanese Australia, one representing the old school Aussie. Just a great metamorphosis of modern Australia, those three.
I think it will be ridiculous if Hines doesn't get the seven jersey. Yeah. I know they're talking about old mate, what's his name? Reynolds.
Yeah.
Which is fair enough. Like up in Brisbane, he's been playing great footy. The Broncos obviously first, leading the competition. But yeah, I just think it's so, if you've given the bloke one Dally M last season, you've hidden him on the bench, you brought him on at a crucial time, he made one error. If that ends up being his Origin career for the next few years, that's absolutely brutal. Give the bloke a shot. Give the bloke a shot. Plus, he's been in camp that whole first 11 days or whatever. Like, keep him in there. He's had that whole first camp to sort of like settle in a little bit. He got a taste for it, probably wants to make up for his mistake. He's the guy to go with. You got to go Hines.
Absolutely. And I think if you don't go with him now, you'll never go with him.
Well, exactly. So, yeah. You may as well just tell him that, and he may as well just go play his best footy for the Sharks instead of wasting his time.
Absolutely. So I think Walker and Hines most likely, followed by sort of like a Luai and Hines or Burton and Hines as sort of backup options. But I think we'll see Walker and Hines. It'd be interesting to see whether like he puts Luai with Hines and whether like he's just hitching his wagons to sort of backing Luai, you know, to the death sort of thing. But because it is a do or die game for Fitler's tenure.
I kind of hope even if we win, he pisses off.
Right. Okay. Yep. Let's move quickly on now. We had a bit of behind time, but let's get quickly to round 15. Just going to fire through the games here. Just give us your prediction and where you think the game's going to be won in a couple of seconds or less. Gold Coast West Tigers up at Seabus Super Stadium.
Tigers through the middle, beat the piss out of them. Titans will drop a lead. Tigers will win in a close one, 1-12 in the end.
Very good. Raiders Warriors Friday 6 PM.
Raiders win this one. Warriors can't keep up. Canberra will be cold. 6 o'clock game is death.
Yeah. Croker 300.
Croker 300. A lot to play for. Boying the boys.
Yeah. And they're led by a fearless leader. Because that's leadership.
That is leadership. Can't wait for another Ricky blow up.
Seagulls Dolphin. Tommy Trbojevic included in this team after being cleared of a grade 1 HIA.
Yeah, Seagulls get this one, mate. Tommy Gilbert's been ruled out for the rest of the season too. So the Dolphins team are in just an injury crisis this season. And they still managed to have done really well. So you can never count them out. But I think the Seagulls get a good bounce back win.
Dragons Rabbitohs 3 PM Saturday afternoon Dragons home game.
This has all the makings to be a little ambush upset, but I'm gonna have to go with the Rabbitohs. Even though Latrell's missing, I still think the Rabbitohs will get it done. They always manage to stack on the points. And if Walker is playing for that New South Wales jersey, I think he's gonna want to turn one on for the Fiddler.
Fantastic. Another one here rolling through them. Broncos, Newcastle, of course, up at Suncorp.
Broncos in an absolute humping.
Right, yep. Interesting one. Then we got Saturday, 7:30, Roosters v Panthers. Only played about a month ago and Panthers pulled their pants down. Obviously, they're Cleary-less.
Cleary-less. Look, a big missing piece with Cleary, but if the Roosters are struggling to beat a Bulldogs team... where Reid Marnie went off with a concussion and, you know, like whatever, you name it, some of the games they've dropped this season, I don't think the Cleary loss will stop the Panthers from getting this.
And I think it's a bad matchup for the Roosters. Roosters have one of the worst attacks in the common. Panthers have one of the best defenses. So
unless they're willing to step in as halfback for the Panthers.
Jack Cogger, he was actually ahead of Nathan. He was an Australian schoolboy ahead of Nathan, I think. When they were coming through, they were the same age.
There you go.
Ironically, you know how tables have turned. But
a little bit of nepotism change.
He came in on halfway through the game or whenever Cleary did his grade 2 hamstring tear and actually did a nice little try just for Brian To'o.
Did a job.
In the corner there. All right. So there we go.
Jackie Cog.
Yeah. So again, like Panthers mentality, next man up as always.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to Sunday's games, Storm v Sharks, Storm home game. This battle is always a hotly contested one with their 2016 grand final, setting the tone for a fierce rivalry there. What have you got here? Storm, not in the best of form.
Yeah, not in the best of form, the Storm. Storms. Look, you hate tipping against the Storm at home, but I just think the Sharks still have a little bit to prove. They lost that game to the Broncos and they had a lot of good field position and they just blew a lot of their fifth tackle options last week. So I think you're going to see a Sharks team come out with a bit to prove. So I'm going to go the upset there, Tom. I'm going to go Sharks to win against Melbourne.
Fantastic. Like that. And then finally, we have the traditional King's birthday tradition for the first time, actually. Bulldogs v Eels.
You're not my king.
That's right. Who we got here? I've got Eels in this one.
Yeah. Look, I think I'll tell you tomorrow. I think a lot rides in the balance with this court decision tomorrow.
Right.
Just because Brown's come into some unreal form, and if this is going to be a recurring issue that's going to keep him out for a long time, I think that could rattle the group a bit. And we just gave away our backup half. So apparently there's talks of Gutho moving to six and then bringing someone into the fullback like Simonson into fullback and then like Dejan Arce or something into the team. Like who knows, honestly. It's going to be a bit of a mess. Like
Show us your Arce.
Show us your Arce. He's got a big Arce. But yeah, so I think Brown plays, Eels win. Brown sits. I think Dogs upset is not out of the question. But look, I think Parra can get it done. And I think they need to if they have any hopes of playing finals rugby league football.
Very good, very good. Moving on now, we've just got one question coming here from a long-time listener of the podcast, Sophie from St. Leonard's. Bit of a different one. This is for our female audience. We've been trying to boost our female audience, you know, very male-dominated, as you would expect, policy in football. But she's asked me about writing in, and, you know, we're happy to answer some questions like this. Who are the hottest two players in Origin football? So why don't you start with Queensland? You think a couple of contestants there, Reece Walsh, Mad Dog Munster, maybe he tickles some fancies. Who else do we
have? Munster's not hot. Munster is not hot.
I'm just throwing it.
His footy's hot. His footy's real hot. Who's hot in Queensland? Who's hot in Queensland? That's a good question. Walsh is the obvious answer, but like, he wears eyeliner, so let's
yeah, but he's like
he's trying to make himself hot. He wears like eyeliner and shit, so like, you can't make yourself look hot and then like reap the compliments.
Wears pink skins as well. Yeah,
clown.
He's like the first of like these TikTok generation that's coming through.
Honestly,
like he's like an NBA player, like in NRL, but he's like really good.
Yeah,
and so it's like weird because you would think a player like that wouldn't succeed in the NRL, but like, he seems to be really good and like thriving.
Queensland aren't the best looking group of blokes. I think if what's his name, Xavier Coates was playing, he might be a decent looker, but they're not the best looking group of blokes of all time.
Yeah. Cobbo?
Yeah. Oh, he's just Cobbo's handsome.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's move to maybe New South Wales a bit more.
I'd take Cobbo out for dinner.
New South Wales a bit more hotly contested. Nico Hines.
Got a bunch of throbbers.
Right.
Absolute throbbers.
Birdo.
Cam Murray. Who else we got?
Harambe's favourite. We got Nico Hines he's considered one of
Junior
the...
Junior Paulo.
Junior.
Oh. What a handsome bloke. He's a big, burly man. That's handsome in my books.
For me, I've got to go Appy Side Chorus, yeah.
He's handsome. Look, just the whole New South Wales team, when you put that blue jersey on you, you're officially handsome.
Yeah, yeah. I think if like Moses was in there, he'd be up there. He's a good looking rooster. Yeah, yeah. Not bad for the big cedar.
But if I'm picking two, you'd probably go Cam Murray and Reece Walsh, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. That's
as
good.
As much as it crushes my soul. So.
Just hit a whip and a nay nay for me. Yeah. There's only a matter of time before he hits like a TikTok dance and a celebration.
Please. Please.
If they start running away with game two, he's hitting a whip. He's hitting a whip.
I'll turn the TV off.
All right, there's your question answered, Sophie. You know, a bit dribbly there, but there you go. But moving on now to, we haven't talked a bit of cricket in a while, but we are coming into a European summer of cricket. Not to forget, we've got the World Test Championship starting tomorrow night. That is Wednesday. Of course, we're recording here on Tuesday night for publication Wednesday morning. Australia taking on India. Australia have named their team as of a couple of hours ago. Josh Hazlewood not proving fit for this game. Hasn't played back-to-back tests since 2021, so that's an issue for him. I don't think he'll play all five Ashes tests either. I think he might be, at best, you might see him in three. If not too much, as much as they did in 2019, and they rotated those quicks around depending on the conditions. But batting line, as expected, Warner, Khawaja opening the batting, Marnus, Labuschagne and Smith, the steady hands at 3 and 4, Travis Head has come into his own over the last 824 months at 5, the unicorn, Cam Green at 6, just going from strength to strength, absolutely tearing it up for the Mumbai Indians in T20, Alex Carey, reliable with the gloves, and then leading into our fearless leader Patrick Cummins, aka Cider, Mitchell Stark, and Nathan Lyon, and Scotty Boland are coming in for that third pace spot. This is a very dynamic team, if you ask me. Obviously, there's some question marks over Warner being, you know, at the back end of his career, and you know, struggling for test runs in England. But warrants a chance there. Ozzie Kawaj has been one of the best batsmen in the world the last 3 years. Marnus, due from overseas runs, obviously made his name in that 2019 Ashes series and hasn't looked back. But he'd be looking for some big boy hundreds, as I like to refer to them as, overseas. You know, an away 100 counts for two or three at home, personally. Steve Smith, he'll be looking to replicate what he did in 2019. I'm not sure whether he can be Bradman again, but certainly, you know, if he can average above 50 in this series, that'll be immense.
Yeah.
Cameron Green and Travis Head, you know, both class players. Green could be a real difference. If Green is able to, like, not only just the world, I think we'll win this World Test Championship, but just go into a broader context of, you know, some people say that, you know, as I said at the beginning, we're looking to this World Test Championship as a warm-up game for the Ashes. You know, just take it, becoming the world's number one team, and, you know, a huge legacy piece. Just forget about that, mate. Just look after the Ashes, you know, bring home a little Ernie. And then we got, you know, that bowling lineup, Pat Cummins and Stark. There's always been that mentality in Australia, right? If you're not bowling 140, we don't want to hear about it, right? Pace, sheer pace, right? Cummins has actually got a bit of reverse tang in his game, so has Stark, and they've become, you know, as they got older, a bit more mature, you know, probably bowling one late 30s, but getting a bit more tang, a bit more variety in their bowling. Nathan Lyon, the GOAT.
The GOAT.
And Scotty B, averages 13 in Test cricket. What
nuts.
Can't he do?
Scotty Big Nuts. I want to see him do some work on the English pitches.
Yeah.
I think if I was selecting Tom, he'd be next up. I think he's earned a shot to prove himself on the English wicket. So
Scotty B?
Oh yeah, big
time. Yeah. I think he'll definitely play probably three of the five tests.
Yep.
Just know his reliability. Like, he's got a very nonchalant bowling action, you know, he's repeatable. You know, he could bowl 50 overs back to back weeks, right? There's five tests in 6 weeks, of course, which I'll be over there for in Manchester. Looking forward to that, ticking off the bucket list, and back in the Oval in London. Ironically, the season starts and finishes at the Oval, so if it does come to the decider, they've got the experience of the World Test Championship, yet again proving that the World Test Championship is a warm up game for the Ashes. Because I refuse to look at anything outside of the scope of Australia. But if I don't see it here happening in the wee hours of the daytime, then it doesn't matter. What's this Bazball stuff? What is this Bazball stuff? Ridiculous.
Oh, chat.
Right. England have beaten their opponents they've played over the last 12 to 18 months before they even got in the field, trying to get everyone to play their style of cricket.
Go on,
the
then.
Australians are more mature than that, right?
Go on, then.
And this is a lesson for Freddie, my new co-worker at work, big Englishman. 6'4" monster. He'll appreciate that.
Monster.
We play our own game.
Bring your fucking Bazball, mate. Have you seen our bowling lineup? You think we're not going to adjust? Score quickly? You think we're come on, let's do it. The best bowling lineup of all time, mate. Take your Bazball and I'll tell you where to put it.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly, yeah. Imagine having to get coached by a New Zealander in cricket. as the great cricketer would say, let's say you do it against our boys. Do it against our boys? Hats off.
Yeah.
But wait till you take on these boys. Yeah. Wait till you take them on Paddy Cummins off to the long run.
Bravest bunch.
Right? Where's Jofra? Where's Jofra when you need him? Well, that's right. He's gone. Jack Leach gone. You're falling like flies. Falling like flies. Jimmy Anderson, how old is he? 50. He's 50. But he could surpass, if he takes 24 wickets or something, he could surpass Warnie. I was like, if I play for 1,000 years, I could surpass Warnie too. Right? Warnie's still taking more wickets in his grave. God rest you soul. God damn. Anyway, that's a bit of cricket chat there. We do have one question actually coming in from a long-time listener. And when I say long-time listener, he is a long-suffering listener. From Matt from Braddon in the ACT, originally from Epping in Sydney. What is the role for Michael Nessa in this Ashes series?
Yeah, right.
What do you see? He's been lining it up.
He's been doing really well, hasn't he? Yeah. So I think he's on standby. If Hazelwood isn't fit to go, as Tom, you were saying, like if he can't get in all these back-to-back tests and he might only get three, if Boland doesn't step up in that first test, you might see... You know, you might see a Mickey Nessa in game two of the Ashes or the second match of the Ashes. You'd imagine Hazelwood would want to try to play 1, 3 and 5. So you might be looking at those replacement options in games 2 and 4. So, yeah, if Boland doesn't sort of impress in the World Test Championship, you could see a bit of a Mickey Ness.
I think you could. And the other scenario here that I've thought about, a bit more innovative as well, is say if Warner... you know, falls off a cliff again, and he's scoring single-digit runs in the first... I think he's locked in for the first two tests, but they reassess after the first two tests. If he falls off a cliff there, there's a potential that you can move Head up to opening.
And then bring in another bowling option.
And then everyone moves up, and then you put Nessa into seven. Because he could be played as a genuine batting all-rounder. He scored multiple first-class hundreds.
Mm.
And he's decent with the stick.
Yeah, I don't mind that.
I think he averages 35 or something for Queensland.
I think you'd want to see first how easy it's going to be or how hard it's going to be to score runs on the deck.
Yeah, first. Absolutely.
But
yeah.
if runs are in plenty,
yeah.
I think having that like that's a would be an option that they could definitely consider for yeah. sure.
It's also about production as well. If it comes down like it usually does to Smith, Khawaja, Labuschagne, you know, Head scoring the bulk of the runs.
Mm.
Then and Warner's not producing much, then that is a genuine option, and you could rely on Nessa for a handy 50 and yeah, then with extra wickets as well. But this is a scenario where, let's say, Australia was down 1-0 after two, or even 2-0 after two tests, God forbid. Mm. You know, he could come in and that'd be an option.
Yep.
Sort of like a modern day test squad that they could usually go with, sort of like, you know, a bit more, you know, middle of the road in the middle there, and you have five top genuine batsmen in a bit of a longer tail.
Right.
Australia's tail hasn't wagged too much over recent time, but hopefully Paddy Cummins can actually get off the square.
We're going to win.
Yeah.
We're going to win 3-2.
3-2.
I'm calling.
Right, so every test match gets a result?
We take the first, we lose the second. We take the third, we take the fourth. And they take the fifth.
Right, okay.
So we go 1-L, 1-1-L.
Right.
That's what we do.
Yeah.
And I know it.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
Well, in 2019, one Ed Baston, which has traditionally been a graveyard, so that's gone, that miss is gone. Lords was a draw.
Mm.
Headingley, well...
Don't talk to me about it. Don't bring it up.
Freddie brings it up to me every time I bloody see him at work.
Oh, fuck you, Freddie. Don't bring it up.
And then we've got Manchester, where we secured the Ashes in 2019.
Hear that, Freddie?
Yeah, secured the Ashes. In my eyes, 3-0.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, just like West Ham throwing on it. I see the result that I want to see. And then, you know, Tim Payne stuffed up the toss, and we weren't coming a vision of the Oval. But yeah, we got Paddy Cummins this time around as captain. So we'll see how you go there. But yeah, so Nessa, potential, especially later in the series. That's my take, Matt, to answer your question in a long-winded way. But yeah, that's what we've got coming up. It is a sporting feast. The European summer combining with the Australian winter, God, sporting
yeah.
codes,
God, yeah.
rugby league, AFL for those who are interested in AFL. You know, you've got your test union, you've got union coming, I've got a World Cup with your union coming.
Oh,
up.
Just yeah, getting yeah. shivers, mate.
Yeah, yeah. Unbelievable. Quay Cooper at 37. Kirtley Beale at 41.
Get Suwali there now, mate.
Suwali.
Get him there now.
You got, you know, Wimbledon coming up for tennis fans, so even though Ash Barty's, you know, got there. And then you've obviously got the Ashes as well. So a spectacular couple of months coming up for sporting fans, avid sporting yep. fans like you and I.
Yep. NBA finals are on right now.
Nikola Jokic doing his thing. Jimmy Butler
basketball
doing his thing.
Basketball World Cup.
It is all happening.
Summer.
It is all happening. I heard you might be making an appearance at the Basketball World Cup as well.
Yeah. Look, I've been taking calls.
You're lining up at the two guard.
That's it, mate.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, stretch four.
Anyone who hasn't seen the highlights of Sydney social basketball on socials, go look them up.
The infamous shot.
Yeah, yeah.
The shot, they call it.
How did he score 4 points in 2 seconds? I'll show you how. I'll show you how. anyway, that's it for political football. Just on a small note, I will say, I'm not sure if this will be the last podcast we do before you go, but if it is, Joseph... I wish you well in your travels. Been a brilliant to be a co-host. We'll still try and get you on from the other side of the world.
Ring in.
Zoom
session.
It's been an absolute pleasure. I think our fans have been appreciative of the banter we've showed back and forth. Appreciated the public policy perspective. They've appreciated the average Joe coming in and asking the everyman questions on the policy side. And obviously
that's what I'm here to do,
getting dribbly with the sports side as well. So... it's been a pleasure, mate, and
it has. It's been a lot of fun, Tom.
Yeah.
It's been what, 2 or 3 years?
Yeah, it's best part over 2 years,
mate. It's been a lot of fun. We've gone through some stuff, some topics, you know.
Absolutely.
Day. We'll have to make like a best of.
That's right.
And you'll have to do some editing, chop some.
And the policy and sporting discourse in Australia is better for it.
And I still don't know anything about policy, but
you're a hard marker on yourself.
I ask the hard questions.
That's right. That's right. The average Joe questions, as we like to say. But best of luck, and it's good to see another Eddie Rice man spreading his wings and letting his light shine around the rest of the world. But
on the next pilgrimage.
Yeah. Thanks very much for tuning in, and go well this week, footballers.